This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Live and Learn. I'm Trot and Tick. 3 months ago, Azizan Manap was charged under the penal code for slapping a 11-year-old pupil at SK Taman Semara. Cikgu Azizan reportedly lost his temper with a student back in April. He was discharged last month, but throughout his ordeal, the National Union of the Teaching Profession stood behind him, the case went viral on social media, and death threats were levelled at the child's parents. In the studio with me to discuss this is NUTP, the National Union's Secretary General, Harry Tan Huat Hock, and also here is Shamila Sekaran, Chairperson of Voice of the Children. Shamila, Harry, thank you for being here.
Hi, and good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon. Thank you very much.
So, Harry, can I begin with you? Azizan said after he was discharged outside the court that whatever he did was in the best interest of the child. So it seems like he was not disputing the fact that he hit the child. Why did NUTP stood behind Cikgu Azizan?
All right. First, I must explain why NUTP took up the case. Before that, NUTP does not condone abuse or assault by anyone. We do not take up cases when a teacher is charged in court for molestation, rape, or in this case, to cause hurt without the use of a weapon. We can only offer our member legal advice. Cikgu Azizan was no exception. We only offered him legal advice, but we will always give a chance to the member to tell us his story. When we read his report, he told us that the teachers raised his bail money. The parents accompanied him to the police station to make a counter report. And because of that, we made an appointment to see all those people in the school at night after their semayang hajat. Imagine to my surprise when the Tok Imam grabbed the mic and insisted that he spoke first. The recalcitrant students stole the mosque donations. I'm not referring to that particular student, but students from the school and run about in my mosque with their shoes on, and I'm fed up with them. NUTP must help Cikgu Azizan, for he is trying his best to instill discipline. Then the parents spoke one by one and said that the teachers are doing a good job in the school and we must support Cikgu Azizan. If not, our children will not be safe. Then his colleagues spoke. They said the school has 25 races. It is an international school without international results. NUTP took up the case that night. Then the PTA chief, we call him the PIBG chairperson, a parent tried to mediate, but to no avail. Hence, the case was before the courts. Now, I must stress that only dedicated teachers will go the extra mile to discipline students in this day and age. And it is this that we appeal to everyone in Malaysia to support our cause so that we can still maintain our Eastern values, respect for the elders, for our teachers, and also our leaders.
Shamila, so you heard why NUTP took the stance it took. What were your initial reactions to the news?
I think this was a very not uncommon situation that teachers and students find themselves in. We've read about teachers, in inverted commas, assaulting students many times before. But really, it points to a breakdown in the social fabric. Clearly, again, my only knowledge of this case at all and any of these other cases has been through the media. So what I know and understand is this does seem to be a problem child. A child who has been involved in substance abuse, glue sniffing, disturbing children during assembly, a couple of other incidents of bad behavior in the school premises. It's important for us to know and remember and realize that it takes multiple people or groups of people to raise a child. You cannot put the burden on one or two individuals alone. The first people in terms of raising, nurturing, instilling values in children and good behavior in children are the parents or the responsible guardians. Then obviously the school or the teachers, because they have the next amount of protracted time with the child. And then, of course, other people, other family members, society, if they go for example, tuition, for maths classes or whatever it is, those teachers If they're going for coaching for something rather, you know. So it becomes society, religious organizations, if children go to a particular religious, have a particular religion, then that organization should be involved in the care and nurturing of a child. So, you know, it's important for there to be communication between parents and teachers, in particular for all children, but in particular when a child is a problem child. I often say there aren't bad children, there are bad parents. But here we have a situation where I don't know Cikgu Azizan. I don't know whether he's a good teacher or a bad teacher or whatever. Obviously, Mr. Harry has suggested from their own research into the school and other parents in the school and this imam that there are problem children, but Cikgu Azizan and a number of the other teachers were good teachers and caring teachers. And yet, we have a teacher reacting with emotion. That in itself is a problem. And what schools really need is a process where children can be sent somewhere for discipline. From what I understand, he was misbehaving during assembly. Send this kid out. Or there must be a process, you know, which needs to be discussed. I'm so glad the teaching profession is here, representative, you know, is here. There needs to be that process. Because while we cannot blame the teacher, the teacher did react as, you know, Mr. Harry did suggest. He did hit the child. It was an emotional reaction. That was wrong. You know, they have said that. And yet, he did it because he wanted to discipline the child. We have to realize that sometimes what we hope will change the child may not necessarily. And really, this child, by the sounds of it, needs far greater intervention than a slap.
Mm-hmm. And what kinds of intervention would this be, Harry? If not hit the child, what would entail in this process?
Now, there is a dispute between us and the ministry because the ministry has laid down many guidelines on how not to discipline the child. In fact, they have 23. Let me give you a few of them. We can't ask the students to run in the heat of the sun. We can't ask them to run around the field. We can't even ask them to stand for a long time in the class or outside the class.
What's a long time?
I don't know. That's what is in the guideline. Mm-hmm. They didn't say for 30 minutes or for 15 minutes.
Until
or
the child faints. La. Don't let the child faint.
I think there must be some leeway given to the teacher. I mean, if the child is being naughty in class, you please stand up and then tell him, you know, the teacher must be able to tell him off. But for your information, I have not finished the list. Mm. In the list, you cannot nag. A teacher is supposed to nag. If you cannot nag, then how are we going to tell the students to retrace, to revisit the topic and to give them, reinforcement? We also cannot have detention class during the recess time. So you want to do it after recess or during after school? The students, the parents will all be waiting, queuing up to bring their children for tuition classes and other programs, other activities. So we also can scold the students in class. So what can we do? Our hands are pretty tight behind our back. This Cikgu Azizan's case is the straw that broke the camel's back. All right. So the teachers have so many constraints trying to restrain and try to discipline the students or only a few naughty students so that the rest of the students in the class can learn. But if these few students are given the leeway to be problematic in class, then the teachers definitely will not be able to impart good knowledge upon their students.
I think one of the problems that we're facing in Malaysia today is the fact that we are moving towards being a first world country. We have a lot more knowledge and information than we had many years ago. When I was in school, it was okay to hit a child. Today, it's not. And you don't just hit the child, you give them a good thrashing, right? today, it's not. And because of research that has been done, that it may not be as useful and helpful. You have had some cases or situations where teachers have gone beyond the discipline of the child and really taken out their own aggression on the child. You have cases where teachers have been racist against certain children. And I think a lot of that has come to bear on the kinds of impediments imposed on teachers as to how they can discipline a child. So basically, you're just supposed to say, you're being a little bit naughty, Johnny. Go and sit in the corner. And that's it. But now we can't even embarrass the child, you know? So it's become very difficult. But what we do not have in place are the support systems and structures. What schools should be having are counselling rooms or counsellors that you can send children to. Who are not teachers, because teachers have enough work in terms of educating the child. What we need are smaller classrooms. For one person to educate 40 children, some who are good and some who are extremely bad, some who are very academically strong, and some who need a lot of hand-holding and guidance to achieve any kind of minimum level of academic achievement, you know, we are imposing a lot on a lot of teachers, including bringing up children. A lot of parents, because they work long hours, expect schools to discipline and bring up their child, which is also wrong. Parents need to be, there needs to be that, like I was saying, a symbiotic balance in terms of this. So what we face today in Malaysia is the fact, I think, is the fact that our structure, our infrastructure, if you like, is third world, but our ideas and thoughts and so forth are moving towards the first world, and therefore you're having this gap. So teachers like Cikgu Azizan should be supported with psychological evaluation, social workers going to the child's house. The school needs to be able to report to JKM, say, for example, who then also work with the parents and find out what's going on in the house that is causing these children to be a bit wayward, for example. But all this is not happening today, you know. So it happens in certain areas or in clusters, but I rather suspect in this case, since we're talking about this case, but also in some other similar cases, this is where the gap is. So the teachers have to teach and discipline, but they do not have the sufficient
support,
skills and support, because teachers are meant to teach. They're not meant to sit and counsel a child. Very few children, very few teachers have gone through counselling training, which for social workers sometimes is a course in itself, you know? And yet we're expecting our teachers to do it.
Right.
And parents also need to play that part. You can't go and tell off teachers who are disciplining your children, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, first of all, we totally support what you have said. But there's a little bit of correction I'd like to make. Teachers are also taught to counsel and also taught to discipline, but not to, it's just only at the superficial level.
Yep.
All right? So in this case, as you were saying, that some of the teachers have gone overboard. Now, teachers are not angels. We agree. We are human beings just like anyone else. And being that, we are also subject to emotions. So sometimes we do make mistakes. But as what we are trying to do, we are trying to advocate, in this case, a code of ethics, whereby the parents should come to school and then discuss with the teachers what are the, you know, problems that may arise. Or maybe in this case, if the teacher has slapped the child, the parents should come, okay, look here, my child is not for anyone to be slapped, you know. But in this case, he has a bruised face. Maybe the school should decide to solve it in an amicable manner, whereby the teacher is forced to foot the medical bill, and then at the end of the day, then there should be some amicable solution for a win-win situation for both sides. Right.
I'm speaking today to Harry Tan from the National Union of the Teaching Profession and Shamila Sekaran from Voice of the Children. We're discussing the Cikgu Azizan case up next. I'll ask Shamila whether charging Cikgu Azizan in court was a bit excessive. You're listening to BFM 89.9. Welcome back. You're listening to Live and Learn. I'm Chua Antek. My guests today are Harry Tan from the National Union of the Teaching Profession and Shamila Sekaran from the Voice of the Children. We're discussing the Cikgu Azizan case. Shamila, this case, I guess, provoked a larger debate about the role of the parents and children in raising a child, which you alluded to earlier, and how we maybe perhaps expect too much from our teachers. But do you think what happened in this instance, bringing Cikgu Azizan to court, was a bit excessive?
Okay, there are two things here. One what Cikgu Azizan did in slapping the child was absolutely wrong. From the media report, it was suggested that when the parents took the child to the hospital, it was the hospital, the doctors, who said, you know, you should file a police report. So I don't know what the extent of the injury to the child was, or why, what was told to the doctors that provoked them to suggest that a police report should be filed. I'm not sure about all that. But once a police report is filed, it's really up to the police and the DPP, really the DPP, to prefer charges. So was it excessive? I don't know what the police found in terms of the investigation and what the DPP saw or what message they're trying to send. I can't speak to all that. But generally, our position has always been that there's a difference between charging someone and sentencing someone. So in this case, I think a charge was perfectly okay. I do appreciate the pressure and the anxiety brought upon Cikgu Azizan, who by all intents and purposes seems to be quite a great teacher. But regardless, what he did was wrong and he needs to face the consequences of what he did. Whether it should and does amount to a charge, I really don't know. But clearly a charge was made out. I don't think there's anything wrong in charging someone if they've committed an offence and the ingredients of the offence are made out. Even if he had been convicted, and in this case he wasn't. He actually got off, right?
He was discharged but not acquitted. What does that mean? I mean,
maybe not amounting to acquittal.
Okay, yeah. DNA.
DNA.
Yeah. Okay, so normally a discharge not amounting to acquittal is where it usually happens where the complainant doesn't turn up in court. And in this case, they may not have turned up because of the alleged death threats.
In this case, it was not the complainant did not turn up in court, but the public prosecutor was advised by the Attorney General, I think, not to proceed.
Right.
So it was something very unusual, according to my lawyer.
Yeah, that's not common. But because once they sign off on the papers, it means there's a charge. So why? But it can and it has happened in the past. But a discharge not amounting to an acquittal, you see, normally what happens is someone is charged and you either convicted or you're acquitted. That means we hear all the evidence, the judge hears all the evidence and decides whether an offence was committed and the person is convicted of the offence, or they say, no, prosecution has not proven the case, so the person gets acquitted. If there's a conviction, then there's a sentence, depending on the nature of the offence. DNAA means that they have not withdrawn the charges. That means a charge is still out there. The offence is still out there, but the person has been discharged, so they're free to go. They don't have to. This is not a sword of Damocles. It's not hanging over the person's head, but they've not been acquitted.
So I this would
that
still,
makes sense.
So this would still be in his record somewhere.
No, because there's no conviction.
Okay.
But a discharge not amounting to, like I said, the more common example is where the complainant of an offence does not turn up in court. So it's very hard for the case to close, to be completed. And because of that, the court just discharges the person.
But this the process has come to a definite end. It can be brought up again in the future if...
Technically, it can.
It can. Okay.
But I think a lot of pressure, because of the public pressure and the media attention on the case and the discussion in the media, because, you know, by and large, for a lot of the cases that we have read about in the media, it does seem as if those teachers in the past, I'm talking about, have been a little bit out of hand and done wrong to the child. But in this specific case, it does seem as if this child was just so naughty and so bad. Everyone sees and knows and understands how and why the teacher reacted in that way. They're not saying it's okay for the teacher to react in this way, but what we're actually saying is, maybe if I was in his shoes, I would have done the same thing, because this kid is like really, really naughty.
Right.
You know? And he was disturbing kids during school assembly, and he's got this string of bad behavior, naughtiness. But this is where I come back to say that really it should never have got to this stage. There must have been much earlier, intervention. For example, we needed, we do need that more resources for JKM because they are so overworked. More resources for JKM, specifically an entire department focusing on children to intervene in cases like this, so that children like this can be taken out of, I mean, if they are in a dysfunctional home, if they're in a home where the parents just don't know how to bring them up, children, these parents need parenting classes and parenting skills, for example. They may not know how to parent a child. You know, I go to the case of those 13-year-olds who are out in Johor somewhere riding those fast bikes, I can't remember it, and they got killed, some of them, right? Mm-hmm. In an accident. What were 13-year-olds doing out at 3 a.m.? There is something fundamentally wrong when the parents are like, yeah, what to do? My kid goes out, what do I do? There's something fundamentally wrong in a system that allows that to happen. So intervention needs to happen at a much earlier age, not when a child becomes so bad that they don't even bother listening to their parents and probably beat the parents up sometimes. And so the parents are afraid to intervene or say something to the child. But much earlier on, when things are starting to go wrong, we need to pick up these cases and do what is necessary.
Yeah. Harry, how do we prevent something like this from happening again?
Before preventing, before giving my suggestion, I would like to just comment on whether it was fair for Azizan to be charged in court. Mm-hmm. Now, whether it's fair or not, I think that's for the court to decide. But for information, when a teacher is charged in court, he would stand to lose half of his pay. He'll be stopped from work until his case has been cleared by the court. And if he loses the case, as in this case, he will lose his job. All right? So I put it to the public. You make a decision for yourself. He tried to discipline the child in question, but at the end of the day, he may lose his job. Mm-hmm. All right?
So can I also add that the child here and is also the victim of this whole situation because of how public the case has went. The family has suffered because of death threats, and for him to adjust back to the school, going back again and leading a regular school going life would be very difficult. Would you have any update on how severe his injury was and whether or not he's still continuing his education?
All right. I would not want to comment on that child because we believe that this case has already been settled. If you have been following our comments very closely, NUTP has never commented on the child. All right. So our comments were totally focused on the teacher and how discipline should be carried out in schools. And also, arising from this, we are also suggesting a code of ethics for the to the ministry to be implemented in schools for the parents.
Okay. But what about bringing up past behaviours such as the glue sniffing or the bullying in assembly? Was that necessary? Like, should the child's past conduct or behaviour determine whether or not what Cikgu Azizan did was right or wrong?
When the news goes viral, or when it becomes public attention, the work of the paparazzi in this case, they will dig out everything. But as I reiterate, and I'm repeating, NUTP has never commented on the child. Mm-hmm. So we leave it as such because we are educators. We want the child to grow up to be a good person. All right? So let it rest, and we focus on the bigger issue, the bigger picture of disciplining our children so that they don't become waste to the society.
Sharmila, this, you call it background information or context, was it detrimental to the kid?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. It's one of the worrying things with social media, and I think the print media or the regular media, if you like, you know, whether it's print or online or even like you guys, you know, BFM, in terms of picking up what is happening on social media, it's also important to realize that, okay, we are the real media and that is the not real media. And sometimes I do find that the print media does get caught up in what's happening in social media and sometimes forgets the boundaries. But you're absolutely right. What happens is it doesn't give the child a chance to have that clean slate. They're always going to have whatever past they've had following them. And one of the big problems here is the fact that, in particular with the death threats, is because when things go viral, you have vigilantes, you've got a whole bunch of people taking sides without actually thinking through and realizing who, where is the problem? What is the real issue? This is not a fight between the parents and Cikgu Azizan or the parents and the school. This is a very, very serious situation of how do children get disciplined in school? How far can or should teachers go in disciplining the children? What role do parents play in their children being disciplined in school? It's a whole bunch of things like that. And I've had I was just sharing with Mr. Harry just now that I have many parents come and say, oh, you know, I want to take a case against the school or a teacher, whatever it is, because they've abused my child, and they detail what the abuse was. And I'm talking about this kind of physical disciplining, but which they find is excessive, or they find that the child doesn't want to go to school anymore because of how the teacher is treating them. They're mocking the child, or so the child feels, which is problematic if a child doesn't want to go to school because they may not want to go to this school, they may not want to go to school at all now. And you've got a 7 and 8 year old not wanting to go to school, which is very, very problematic. So how do we work through this whole thing? And I've got parents come to say that, you know, I approached the headmaster or the school administrator and they have not taken my complaint seriously. They have just said, yeah, your child is naughty and useless. And, you know, they've taken the side of the teacher without trying to resolve the problem. We also have situations like this where a teacher may have gone out of bounds, and absolutely he has. There's no doubt about it. His intentions may have been right and good. He approached in a very emotional way for whatever reason. Maybe he had a bad morning already, I don't know. But at the end of the day, like you said, it's the child that needs to be protected in this whole situation, in this whole scenario. And when death threats are leveled against families, can the child go back to school? Are there going to be a bunch of people outside waiting to beat up the child and his or her siblings? Mm-hmm. You know? So these are the things that we forget when we start polarizing the issue.
Yeah. But at the same time, I was also thinking, without all this extra information, wouldn't Cikgu Azizan then be judged or trialed by the court of public opinion very unfairly because what was reported might not necessarily be the whole truth? I don't know whether this is a fair question to pose to you, Harry.
Oh, right. Like I said, if you talk about facts and figures, like in this case where Cikgu Azizan supposedly slapped the child, right? So it is very, since the case has gone viral, everybody is commenting about it. And as I said earlier, so every single detail will be brought into public view. And of course, sometimes it may be taken out of context. But at the end of the day, we should look at the issue in a bigger picture. We should see whether the issue of the teacher hurting the child or the teacher trying to discipline the child. So once you can separate that two items, I believe in this particular case, then the result is, of course, in favor of Cikgu Azizan. So we feel that it should be...
Shamila, I see
kept asset as such.
Yeah. Shaking your head vigorously. Yeah. You disagree?
You know, this is the thing that unfortunately in our society, we have often gone down the road that hitting someone, and it's also parents hitting their children, leads to discipline. And I think we need to disabuse ourselves of that. Conversely, there are a lot of people who say because children are not being hit, they're becoming more crazy and disrespectful of society, disrespectful of authority. But it goes back to what I was saying just now. There are so many different techniques. Our public schools, I understand that this was an international school, but I don't know.
No, it's not an international school. It's just a public school
with
where there are 25 races inside.
Right, okay,
because
fine.
It's near a factory area. industrial area.
Right.
Right.
Okay.
So there are all kinds of people there.
So if it's a normal public school, Sekolah Kebangsaan, then very high chance you've got a vast number of students and a limited number of teachers. So we need to start, I mean, the Ministry of Education really needs to start looking at, re-looking at their ratios. A lot of schools in the more developed countries have what you call teaching assistants. So you have your main teacher, but you also have people who come in and help the children sit at the back of the class. They help the slower students, you know, that kind of thing. One teacher cannot look after 40 children. Impossible. Worse, if these are children who come from different cultures and backgrounds, it makes it even more complicated. You cannot have one teacher doing the school administration, I mean, doing the paperwork, doing the teaching, marking school exams, while keeping an eye out on the slow learners, plus the maybe children who need a little bit more guidance and closer supervision so that they don't get out of hand, while paying attention to the good students who want to get ahead and want to study. The other thing is, what we do not have is an intervention in terms of children who are not academically inclined. We have very few vocational schools. They're not easily reached, if you know what I mean. So if you have a vocational school where you've got to travel for an hour or 2 hours, more than likely, the children are going to end up in the normal Sekolah Kebangsaan, when they may not be academically inclined. It's better off sending them off to the vocational schools, getting them equipped in whatever it is, electrical engineering, mechanics, whatever it is, building up their skills there. And they may not, they may feel that they fit in better in that system rather than in the absolute academic system that we are used to in this country.
All right, coming back to what Shamila has said, we are talking about disciplining a child. So there are many ways to discipline a child. I think we have agreed on that earlier. Of course, like, for example, in detention classes or certain things that we can't do, but this is what goes, actually, the actual reality goes on in class, where the students are hauled up, asked to stand in front of the class. All right. So some of these things, although they are prohibited or they are the don'ts by the ministry, but still the teachers do have certain, do have to carry out those methods of punishment so that students are able to fall in line, and therefore learning learning takes place. So in this particular case, because we are referring to Cikgu Azizan, all right, so he has garnered a lot of support, a lot of help from so many bodies, and we feel that this momentum must be pushed forward so that we don't end up like a progressive society whereby the children and their parents, they call their parents by names. We don't want that. We want to maintain our Eastern values, whereby we respect our elders, we respect our teachers, we respect our leaders. I give you a simple case in point. 10, 15 years ago or 20 years ago, when you attend a pub, when someone is giving a public address, there will be utmost silence. But nowadays, if you attend any function where someone is speaking in front, there'll be a lot of chattering and speaking at the back. Why is that so?
Right. I want to pick up on something you mentioned to the press about how you feel parents should speak to school principals or the school before making a police report. When is it appropriate to get the police involved?
All right. Now, if the case is, I mean, normally when it involves the law, all right, so then it's up to the parent. But if it is a case of indiscipline, of the case of disciplining the child, so the parent should come to the school first and see whether it's there, you know, and discuss with the school authorities. And sometimes, as I said, we are not angels. Sometimes we do make mistakes. So when we do make mistakes, if the intention of the teacher is to discipline the child, I mean, some amicable solution must be found. Perhaps the teacher can offer to pay off the medical bills and then, promise not to repeat the offence again. So I think that is something that the parents should consider, right? Of course, as I said earlier, we do not condone abuse. We do not condone things that the teachers do that are against the law, molestation, throwing the chair against a child, that definitely we do not condone. But sometimes in the heat of the moment, because the teacher is so concerned for the discipline of the child and also for the whole class, of course, sometimes he make mistakes, but then he must be given a chance to atone for his mistakes.
I think one of the things about disciplining a child is it must lead to a change in behavior. So taking it out of the Cikgu Azizan case, but I remember there was one situation where children were asked to cut grass with normal paper scissors, like the small scissors, you know, the school grass, you know, as a means of punishment. So something like that, whatever wrong the child did, how is cutting grass, the school grass in the sports field, going to change the child's behavior, apart from instilling a kind of fear for discipline? And so the child behaves because they don't want to have to cut grass, or they don't want the school laughing at them because they're out in the school field cutting grass, so they don't want, you know, to be laughed at by their school friends, so they behave. But they don't behave because they realize what they've done is wrong, you know? So whatever the punishment is, it must lead to some kind of change in behavior. So in a situation, and I'm not talking about the Cikgu Azizan case, I mean, clearly there's so much that could have been done much earlier on, which would have averted or avoided us coming to where we are today. But it didn't happen. Sure, absolutely. You know, Cikgu Azizan may be a very good teacher, very concerned about his students, but in the heat of the moment, saw something going wrong and just reacted. Like I said, human being, people react, but we expect a little bit more of people in authority. We don't expect the policeman to go around slapping people. We expect them to have learned how to hold back and keep their emotions in check. And because they're supposed to have other avenues, for example, go and stand outside the headmaster's door after assembly because you're going to get told off by the headmaster. We're calling your parents in, that kind of thing. Or whatever the discipline would be. But generally, what we need to see is how the mode of discipline leads to something better in the child. So things like, for example, getting the child, sitting the child down, and this is not foolproof. You're not going to get 100% success rate, but it's one of the techniques of getting children to realize why what they're doing is wrong. Obviously, if a child is high on something, having that conversation is not the time. But as to, you know, the effect of what you have done, which has caused disturbance to somebody else, is something children do know and understand. And if that is imposed on them and but it has to be done on a regular basis. It's not something that happens today, we react, and then we forget about it.
Yeah, it's very systemic.
Along the same line, I think she is, Shamila is referring to some aspects of disciplining a child. But to let everyone know, we have a standard operating procedure. Now, if the child does not do his homework, if the child is recalcitrant, or whatever it is, there are some discipline problems, normally the parents will be asked to come to school to try to resolve the matter. More often than not, because of our constraints and the pressures of our daily work life, the parents are not able to come in. I give you an example. The parents need only come to school once in a year for a PIBG, or in the case PTA association. Our statistics show that the parents coming for this particular meeting is less than 15%. 15% of a school population. So from there, you can see how much importance the parents attach to a teacher's call for him or her to come to school. So this is something that we need to address. But unfortunately, this state of affairs, I don't think will be improved in the near future. But at least we must try to work towards that. So that's why, I keep on stressing that we want to put forward a code of ethics for the parents, so that at least then they know when there is something wrong with their child, or when the school calls them, they have to come. They have to make a commitment to come to school and see what is wrong.
But can I ask, what happens if they don't come? What is the recourse for the school?
Then that's why we are having this conversation here today. Because when the parents don't come and the child is a repeat offender. Now, that, I'm not saying all children are like that. But of course, there are some who are very hard and they are repeat offenders. So if we can't call the parents and there are so many restrictions faced, imposed by the ministry on the teachers, what can we do with these children? And if someone keeps on, if a child keeps on bugging the teacher or keeps on harping or keeps on, for example, maybe bullying the other students, at the end of the day, there is no choice but for the school to put in all the documentation and expel the child.
I also need to say that there are cases where children have been violent against teachers as well. So teachers have faced harm to self or threats of harm to self from students. But absolutely, you know, this is where we need that extra support. Teachers should focus on teaching, and we need that those other bodies or institutions or people coming in and supporting that whole process.
To conclude, Harry, what was the lesson from this episode?
As I said earlier, this was the straw that broke the camel's back. So from this episode, we are trying to change the mindset of the parents and also the public at large that disciplining the child is a responsibility of everyone, not just only the teachers. So everyone must get involved. And in this case, we have already got Page on board. We have got the Royal Police with us. We have got even the the crime prevention group by Tan Sri Lee Lam Tai. And I think hopefully today I can convince my good friend here, Ms. Shamila, to be on board also. So that this is a project or this is something that all Malaysians must work towards to instill good discipline within all our young citizens so that in future they'll be good citizens of Malaysia.
Shamila, final message. Parents to take more responsibilities.
Yes, parents must be more responsible. In fact, they're the primary people. I would like to see parents who do not take an interest in their children's education being charged for some kind of neglect, which is available under the Child Act. But unfortunately, that will involve a lot more resources from the police. So I don't think they're going to be happy listening to me. But, you know, we need to make parents accountable. That is important. As much as we need to hold teachers accountable also. We have to remember that children, in particular teenagers are at a very peculiar and particular stage in their lives where on some part they are so adult and in some other ways they are so mindless that you just wonder whether they have a brain at all. But that is part of being a teenager. It's part of that whole process that's going on in the brain that is moving and developing. It's almost like, you know, the caterpillar before it becomes a butterfly, it's a chrysalis, and all you see is this ugly white thing, but there's a lot of activity going on inside that we don't see, and that's a teenager's brain. And if we realize this, that we're all part of the development of that brain, and how important it is, then we will take a far greater stand in participating. You know, I don't understand why the whole society had not been brought in, given the fact that into this problematic scenario, given the fact that the imam said that these kids are running around a mosque with their shoes on and stealing his whatever the tithes or petty cash or whatever it is. You know, this is something that the whole community should have been involved in and basically calling out these children and being part of the disciplining of these children, all of them, including the boy in concern, and not leave it to get to this stage.
A lot of work to be done. Hopefully, those in charge in the community would work towards an amicable solution, as Harry has said.
But can I say, yes. I think it's fantastic you're having this discussion, and I'm really hoping that whoever hears this, unfortunately, it's only in English, it needs to happen in the other languages. This discussion needs to happen outside a lot.
Yes, I can agree with that. We are available to download on podcast, so if you miss any part of this interview, you can listen back to the parts where you miss by downloading the BFM app available via Google Play or Apple App Store. Shamila, Harry, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.